forward to playoffs. I mean, you know, start of the season, that's what you want. You want an opportunity to play for the cup. Toronto's going to be an extremely tough matchup. Obviously, a ton of firepower and, you know, added some toughness at the deadline, playing much harder, tougher brand of hockey. You know, so it's going to be a great matchup. Should be fun, and we're excited to get going.
Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 5-9, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. That was Brad Marchand, as if you didn't know.
Get ready for a respect off. Mm-hmm. I respect you.
John Cooper is the king.
Yeah.
Like, you can't. That's a good attempt.
I got to be honest. I don't think Jim Montgomery has it in him. Like, he just seems like a little more gruff fellow who's like, we're going to play a hockey game. Maybe I'm going to learn something about him in the series. I don't know. But I don't think you're getting, like, the soliloquies from him like you did from Cooper. And I got to be honest. I'm okay with that.
Yeah. And Marchand said they added some toughness to the deadline. I guess Bose and like Labushkin and Edmondson. The real toughness was added last offseason.
Was the friendships we made along the way?
Yeah. No.
It was the power play. No, the power play is the toughness.
Incorrect.
Okay.
Especially not this year.
Yeah, no.
The way it's gone the second half of the season. It's guys playing significant minutes on the top line that are, you know, capable of putting the puck in the back of the net and assisting to create that goal. But also aren't getting pushed around. And in fact, are doing some of the pushing in Max Domi and Tyler Bertuzzi. Is that the biggest reason for optimism? Like, what is it? If you're gonna do something that is dangerous thinking.
Oh, it's so hard for me to even like get myself in that headspace.
Say you were gonna be, I don't know, optimistic and think about the best case scenario for this Leafs team headed into this series against the Boston Bruins, where would you start?
I think I would start with the fact that there is some toughness, but that the guy they brought in is a bona fide playoff performer in Tyler Bertuzzi. I know his team lost that series, but he had 10 points in 7 games. He's a guy who has that bite. He has that nastiness, and it's not a myth we're talking about. The way, however much we wanted Ilya Samsonov to be rounding into form and finding his game at just the right time, that has happened in spades with Tyler Bertuzzi specifically. So I'm going to make it about him. It is a team thing that you have more of those guys now. Mm-hmm. But Tyler Bertuzzi, he didn't play on all those teams. And he's not on Boston anymore. So he gets to throw away the ghost that they had last year. He's going to go in that room and say, these guys are losers. Mm-hmm. I know. I was one of them.
I was one of those.
I was
losers.
One of them. I did my best
dragging them by their collars, right? to win that series at the 10 points, but
he tried.
Couldn't do it.
So I think that just having guys, there's been enough of a turnover, and the guys that have been brought in as part of the turnover, they have an ownership of the team. Like, it's a vague concept I'm trying to hit at here, but it's, God, I sound like Pierre Dorian here. The biggest reason for optimism with this Leafs team is that they are a team. Mm. It's not the core four and friends. Mm-hmm.
And even Ryan O'Reilly with the Conn Smythe trophy in his back pocket, just showing up as a mercenary.
Well, but it's like he also immediately, it's like, you're not a mercenary, though. Like, you're one of us. You're going to leave immediately. But he was also immediately welcomed into the fold. And I just feel like there's so many of these or more of these kind of middle class guys. Like, okay, Max Domi's playing on the first line, but it's like, look at what he makes. Like, he's a middle-class player on this team. Tyler Bertuzzi, same exact thing. You know, McMahon. Like, there's just so much more of this. But these are guys who are not hangers-on. Bertuzzi isn't the left winger on the Marner and Matthews line. He, Matthews, and Domi are all, I mean, let's be honest, Austin Matthews is with straw that serves the drink there. But they're all working together in spades. This isn't and Bertuzzi's up there. And it's not, well, you got Marner and JT. And Bobby McMahon's on the line, too. All these guys who in the past would have felt like fringe, almost hangers-on, they feel like woven into the fabric of what this Leafs team is this year.
Yeah, I think that's one of the main areas of optimism, if you're, again, going to take that tact, which I think most Leaf fans, they steal themselves by not being optimistic.
Oh, no, it's like, I am doing this. This is actually among the greatest pieces of professionalism I've ever shown.
Well,
is coming to the mic with reasons the Leafs will win a postseason series.
Yeah, I think it's that, and it's the physicality, but it's also the man. What have we been saying? Even when Tyler Bertuzzi and Max Domi weren't going great at the beginning of the season, it was that these guys, one, look like they're built for the postseason.
Yep.
Two, have been, excuse me, built for the postseason.
Domi too.
Came through in spades. Yeah, like we talk about the Tyler Bertuzzi, like seven games, he had 10 points. Max Domi is a huge part of that Stars run a season ago. Okay, both these guys, and they're you're right as far as the amount of money they're making, they're middle class players, but these guys are significant, significant pieces of this Leafs team playing on the top line. You're talking about the two guys that have performed the best in the postseason, seem best suited for the postseason, are now playing alongside Austin Matthews, who I know didn't have a goal in the five games against the Panthers, had an outstanding scoring series in the first round series against the Lightning. The other thing, and this is where the real dangerous thinking comes in, where it's like you use logic, but like there are numbers. There are numbers to tell you this Bruins team's not that good. I'm sorry. They're just not. Okay? Leafs are first in goals scored in all scenarios this season. Bruins are 13th.
Okay.
Leafs are 10th in expected goals for percentage, which isn't great.
Yeah.
But that's again, this isn't 5-on-5. This is all scenarios. Expected goals for percentage. So it takes your expected goals for and your expected goals against. And what is the percentage that you have? And Leafs are 10th. The Bruins are 20th. They're 20th in the NHL. The Bruins, like we said off the top, they have this great goaltending tandem. It's not this great goaltending tandem that benefits from the strength of the defensive play of the team. They're just great goalies, and they need them to be great day in, day out. If they're not great, the Bruins aren't good. And, I mean, the same can be said for the Maple Leafs to a degree, because obviously the blue line is – but, yeah, here's what I'll say. If both goaltenders are average – Maple Leafs have a great opportunity to win this series. The Maple Leafs will win this series. If both goalies are just average, the Bruins need better goaltending than the Leafs need from Ilya Samsonov.
That's the way I was going to put it, is that the Leafs can be sunk by their goaltending. If Ilya Samsonov or Joe Wall, like he's allowed to be bad too, if they stub their toe and do not give them competent goaltending, that can absolutely be a reason why. Swayman and Allmark can be fine, and the Bruins can still lose this series. If they stand on their head, I think Boston probably wins this series, because that's been the recipe last year. It was the recipe this year for them. But I think that's a great way to put it, that if both goalies are average, that should have the Leafs laughing. They would take that trade in a heartbeat. I don't often have numbers, but let me give you one.
Oh, give me a number.
Now, I should have wrote down where I got this. Somebody in The Athletic had it, but in the 23 minutes that Austin Matthews and Charlie McAvoy have both been on the ice at 5-on-5.
I love this.
Toronto out-attempted Boston 40-10.
That's a lot.
Outshot them 19-3.
That's a lot.
And this is my favorite one. Outchanced them 25-2.
Now, they outscored them only like 1-0 or 2-0 or something,
The
right?
Leafs only scored once in all of that. So, but what does that go? It's just like, that is actually the perfect stat to give after the theory you just gave. You know why they only scored once? Because the goalies were amazing. They were standing on their heads. So if that's going to happen, then I bet it's going to look a lot like that, where Matthews and the Leafs are driving play, and God, I can't do that again, but we'll save that for Monday's show. But you see that number there, and I mean, it's hockey. This isn't the NBA where you go like, okay, can OG stop this guy in a playoff series? But a lot of this is going to come down to Matthews v. McAvoy or Matthews v. Lindholm or whatever way they want to go about that. And if it's going to look anything close to that, I don't think it's going to look like that. I refuse to believe over a seven-game series the percentages of that will just continue, because guess what? Chuck McAvoy, pretty good at hockey as well, so I think he's going to like clean that up a little bit.
Best defenseman in the series.
Yeah, but if far and away, but if it's anything close to that, the Leafs are laughing. And then when you get away from the high-end matchups in this series, that only begins to benefit the Leafs as well.
Yeah, there's only one Charlie McAvoy, and I know Hampus Lindholm's a fine player.
Pretty close. Yeah.
He's
well, he's not close to McAvoy, but it's like he is close to Morgan Riley Lindholm.
Yeah, he is. He's really, really good. But yeah, they're like we said off the top of the show, that there are scores. There are guys that do things. There's no punt line on this Leafs team as currently constructed, as long as, Bobby McMahon, Kelly Yarncroke are healthy. But even if they're not, William Nylander is going to be on a third line, centered by Pontus Holmberg, which might bring us to our biggest reason for pessimism. This one, you don't have to go too deep, right? Like, it's yeah.
Well, can I just say the obvious one first?
Yeah, ghosts.
Yeah, they wear the jerseys, so, yeah. You know, there.
Mm-hmm. All right, like, if you were going to go beyond, yes. Like, it being the Leafs and it being the Bruins.
That I think it's possible Boston has the best two defensemen in the series, and that is, generally speaking, a recipe for disaster. You can make the argument. I don't think you can, but you can maybe make the argument the Leafs have... they definitely have two of the three best forwards, but it's not the best two. Like, I take Pastrnak. Oh, I take right the way they're going right now. You take Pastrnak over Marner. You take Pastrnak over Nylander. You certainly take him over Tavares. But when you look at the blue line, I mean, you can quibble. And hey, if playoff Riley shows up, he is better than Hampus Lindholm. But it hasn't been playoff Riley leading into this. Now, that's the whole thing. Flip the switch and prove me wrong. I'd love to see it. But that is the biggest reason for pessimism for me, is that it's entirely possible Boston has the best two defensemen in the series. And we have so often talked about that being, and it's just, it's the Leafs' Achilles heel and it's their biggest strength. Well, outside of goaltending.
Yeah. And it sounds bad when you talk about, well, the Bruins, all they have is the blue line and the goaltending advantage. That sounds bad. but honestly, if you go back to what has sunk this Leafs team, and especially in the second round against they just haven't scored enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now part of that was the goaltending that the Panthers also displayed, but it just seems that they're more capable of breaking through a good defensive team. I know that the four games that they played during the regular season would not make you feel this way.
Okay, so I kind of wanted to talk about that. The idea of this team, this Leafs team, and every team is different after the deadline, but it wasn't like Joel Edmondson is what changed the sea for this Leafs team. Bertuzzi, Matthews, Domi.
Mm-hmm.
This forward configuration, they're a completely different group with this figuration than they were when they were losing to Boston 4-1 and whatever the other score was in that game in the Joe Wall week. So that's the reason why I feel like you can't throw those games out. They still obviously matter. They still carry some import. But the Leafs are a completely different constructed group. And unlike last year where it's, well, they added 15 new players, they just were able to find the right or closer to the right configuration.
Well, and also, like, the two games previous to those two games in the span of a week were, I mean, both overtime games.
Yeah.
And, like, there was certainly the first one where the Leafs controlled the play hockey game.
There was one where Samsonov he stopped 38 of 40 in an overtime loss. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, that brings me to my biggest reason for pessimism. And it's the guy, it's the guy in net who at last check was like on the verge of being pulled in what wouldn't have been, I guess, his final game of the regular season.
Yeah.
If Ilya Samsonov gets yanked after allowing four goals to the Detroit Red Wings on Saturday, I gotta figure they find a way to get him into one of those final games, either against the Panthers or the Lightning. But that happened.
Yeah.
Like, there was a real discussion that Sheldon Keefe had with his assistants. It's like, this guy's awful. Like, what do we do here?
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, maybe part of the discussion was, well, we really would prefer him not to play in any of those games. So let's cross our fingers, hope that the worst is behind him in this hockey game. And Leafs came back with the incredible, furious last 40 minutes losing in overtime, and all is forgotten. Despite the fact that he had a save percentage under 800 in his final two regular season games. And yeah, he's certainly bounced back after spending his little sojourn with the Marlies, but there's a real potential for the first time in this generation of Leafs teams, them being completely sewered by their goaltending. It hasn't happened. They haven't gotten the superior goaltending except for one series, and it was the one they won last year when he outdueled Andrei Vasilevsky. But the possibility, and man, you want to talk about likely scenarios and just eventually the law of statistics working in your favor and winning a series. Like, eventually you don't have an elite goaltender and you keep rolling the dice with these guys, and especially considering, like, the lack of extreme run of success that, like, Jack Campbell had going into some of these series, that eventually one of these years, you are going to be sunk by your goaltending. That's the thing that I think is a very real possibility that everybody's aware of.
Yeah, it's super, super terrifying. And I, you know, truth serum, who knows what the team feels about Joe Wall right now. I'll tell you one thing. We all feel differently about it. I'll put my hand up. Like, I was somebody who was pretty bullish on Joe Wall. I fully expected him to, by this time, have grabbed the starter's job. Part of it is injury that allowed him not to do that, but a bigger part of it was his own performance. They gave him those two Boston games. They said, go steal this job from Ilya Samsonov, and he couldn't do it. This isn't to say that Joe Wall, if he's needed in the series, can't come in and play well. Of course he can. There's a reason the team had the belief in him, but, man, it's a scary proposition if that's the guy you're turning to. And it's like, man, we've all made our jokes about, like, Matt Murray, Martin Jones, but if it gets to that, like, series over.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, again, Red Sox came back. I guess stranger things have happened, but that ain't happening to this team, folks. So, yeah, the goaltending is the biggest blinking red light on this team that you would point to. One other guy I just wanted to ask you about heading into the series mm-hmm. here, Marner.
Mm-hmm.
I can kind of go two ways. I'm not going to say there's any world where, like, Mitch Marner goes into a postseason with pressure off of him. We know he has the contract extension, and there's always going to be eyeballs. But has there ever been a year that he's felt more under the radar heading into a postseason series?
Yeah,
it's like, do you even think about him?
No.
So much of it was the injury, I know. But since he's come back, he's just been in this weird flux a little with Matthews, a little with JT.
In a weird way, it might be the best thing for him not to be next to Austin Matthews.
I couldn't say it, but that's kind of what I was getting at here.
Yeah, the pressure is on the Matthews line to look as good as it looked down the stretch. And boy, you want to talk about things that were bad about 2019? How about the things that were good in those series against the Bruins? It was Mitch Marner looking at his absolute best, playing alongside John Tavares, which is going to be the reunion that we see mm-hmm. going into game one. Now, it was 5 years ago, so JT, a little different look this time around. But yeah, remember there was a time where we're like, oh, look at Mitch Marner blocking shots at the end of a playoff game?
It's so remarkable where we have ended up with this player in his postseason resume because of the way it started.
Mm-hmm.
Mitch Marner, the small, diminutive playmaking winger, going full Johnny Bauer, like stretching out his face to block the shot at the end of the series. And you think, oh my God.
The same in the series afterwards. But
okay.
And that might have been the result of that play.
Let me live in that moment.
Yeah.
And you sit there going, oh my God, he wore 93 in London and he is killer.
Mm-hmm.
He is Dougie. And I mean, no one's ever had that thought since. And like so much of it is that nobody's Gilmore and nobody's Dougie. So don't ask somebody to be that. And let's be honest, Mitch Marner's not going to be that. But how it started and where we have ended up with the like puck over the glass jokes and all the stats about game five and on in series, there's no player. Like you asked me this with the Blue Jays this week, like who's done the biggest 180 in terms of their public perception? Yeah. Starting that of Mitch Marner and you're thinking, oh my God, there it is. Like that's the chosen one. He is the guy he said he was. And not to say that he still can't be that guy, but it's just, man, it's amazing what the weight of expectations can do to somebody. And he's been, I'm not gonna say he's been crushed by him, but it's like he's clearly been wearing him since that moment.
Yeah, he won't get Charlie McAvoy.
That's a great point.
He's playing on the second line.
Well, so I was reading some of the stuff out of Boston. Again, we're talking to our guy Jimmy Murphy in a couple minutes, which is, by the way, just like out of central casting a guy.
Jimmy Murphy O'Sullivan.
Yeah, exactly. O'Doyle. But there's been some belief out of Boston that, and they have done this at times, going to Lindholm and McAvoy together as a super pair. If Matthews and Domi and Bertuzzi can seem so dangerous that has to happen, what world does that open up where you're looking at like a Carlo Grzelcyk second pair? Mm-hmm. And I like both of those guys when they're playing with Lindholm or they're playing with McAvoy together.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's a real possibility here that being removed from the spotlight of the 69-goal scorer and those other two dudes and being the number one with a bullet line, that you can be Mitch Marner, 99-point scorer, Selke award vote-getting
winger,
playing alongside the captain, Johnny Toronto, that he... Like, almost, it's weird. Like, it's the Leafs, and there's always the weight of expectation.
Yeah.
But there is actually, like, it feels like a lifting of some of the expectation around a player who is also just coming back from injury. So he's always, listen, there will always be that excuse. I don't know if this enters a professional athlete's mind, but I can tell you that, thinking about the narrative for me, if Marner doesn't perform in the series, well, it's like, what is he supposed to do? John Tavares is a million years old, and he's, you know, he was just never healthy at the high ankle sprain. What an unfortunate injury.
That's a good Kipper impersonation. Yeah. That's good.
Simmer down. But, yeah, there is a potential for all the things working in the correct direction for Mitch Marner to have the postseason of his life.
No, I wholeheartedly agree, and I'm just so happy Kipper doesn't listen so I can make that joke. But the other thing with him is that when you look at the spot he's in now, how important is it for Sheldon Keefe to stick with this?
Mm-hmm.
How quick is it? Like, is his finger already hovering on the button as he asks where it is? Does he not even want to know? It's like, don't tell me where the magic marker is so I can't even change the lines, because we know his propensity to, when everything, forget when everything goes stale, when literally anything goes wrong, it's like, ah, get them back together, get Matthews and Marner back together. He has done a great job of going away from that since this Bertuzzi, Domi, Matthews trio has kind of formed and Marner's been back. Now, he's been forced into it by certain moments. Can he stay away from putting them together if they lose game one, or if Matthews and Domi and Bertuzzi have a quiet game one? Because we talked about this when, I forget what game it was, but he said they had the slow first period, he stuck with them, and then they really found their life as a line as the game went on. Is he going to be able to do that knowing he has Marner sitting there waiting in the wings? There's going to be a lot of questions about the coaching job Sheldon Keefe does in this series.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the right answer is, because I'm not going to say there's no world where it makes sense to put them together. But that, I think, is his biggest first crucial test in this
series. I would like to think, especially on the road where you don't control the matchups, that let's see
what
it looks like with the talent spread across three lines. And I know, Nylander hasn't looked great at the end of the season, although, like, he was not playing on that third line when Max Domi was out and Mitch Marner was playing alongside Austin Matthews.
Yeah, what was Keefe's line of, like, and it's funny because this is the player you can most believe it about, but it's also like, oh boy, that's a change in tone from Sheldon Keefe of, well, he's done playing regular season hockey. Okay.
Yeah.
I hope he's ready for the playoffs then.
Yeah, and that's been a scenario that's worked for him.
Yeah, it has.
Although, you can make fun of the Bruins' lack of center depth, and you should.
Yep.
Because, there is no Patrice Bergeron walking through that door. The Leafs do factually have Pontus Holmberg, like, being asked to play third line center minutes, and a line that is not a punt line, one that's going to be expected to score on occasion. All right. Should we talk to a person from Boston named Jimmy Murphy?
We should.
Yeah. Okay. He's a Bruins reporter for Boston Hockey Now, host of the Eye Test podcast. As the Fan Morning Show continues, Ben Annis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. Leafs Bruins game one tomorrow night, Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet and CBC. And I said already earlier, Patrice Bergeron isn't walking through that door.
Bet he is.
I was going to say, like, I think he won't put on, I don't even know if this is true. Maybe he'll be wearing skates when he does it. He's going to be waving the flag, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure he's going to be out there. Zdeno Chara was in town. Oh, it's like he ran the marathon.
Yeah, okay.
They're bringing out all the tormentors of Leafs past.
Where's Tuukka Rask?
I bet there. Why not? Do you not remember what happened the last time these two teams played in the regular season?
I don't.
They honored the 2013 championship team, and Brad Marchand went over.
That's
and it's like, hey, let's rub this in the Leafs' face one more time.
Yeah, he did do that, didn't
he? Do you not remember?
Yeah, now I do.
Now you do. So, of course. It's like, I would not be surprised. Man, like, David Ayers is going to, like, wave the flag before the game for them or something, okay?
Yeah, come on. That has nothing to do with that.
No, I know. It's about poking the bear.
All right. And
funny for the Bruins, I know.
Yes. All right, let's talk to Jimmy Murphy, editor-in-chief for Boston Hockey Now and host of the Eye Test podcast. Jimmy, thanks for doing this. How's it going?
No problem at all, guys. Going great. Really excited about the series.
Can't wait for it to get underway tomorrow night. Let's start with this, because it was kind of curious the way the Bruins finished their regular season. We all felt like we were headed towards a Panthers-Leafs rematch from last year's second-round series. I don't know. Do you think the Bruins preferred this matchup over the Lightning?
Do I think? Yeah, I definitely think they do. They're not going to tell you that. But, I mean, if you watch those games closely, they were just going through the motions until basically – for their last two games, I'd say for, you know, all three periods against Washington, they just weren't there. And then the first two periods against Ottawa as well. And then they kind of woke up and got it going in the third period against Ottawa. But, yeah, they did not look interested in either game. I think they just wanted to get to the playoffs. And, you know, I think if you got them off the record, I think they definitely say they wanted this. And I'll say to them and to the Bruins fans here who think that the Bruins are just going to walk through the Leafs, be careful what you wish for. And, I'm surprised that people are acting this way or sort of wanting to pick their opponent after what happened with the Bruins last year, because this was the same thing last year. Like, oh, we're just going to go right through the first round. Now, this isn't the Bruins team that lost to the Florida Panthers. This is not nearly as good as the Bruins team. So, again, I think people around here need to be careful what they wish for.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, and like you said, no, you're not going to, it's going to be a respect off between these two teams from now until puck drop of, oh, they're so good, they're so talented, you love their structure, you love their depth, of course. But what do you think it is about this Leafs team? Is it like for somebody like Brad Marchand, do you think it's just like all the way back to 2013 of the continued postseason success? Do you think it's the way the four games went this year? Like, what is it, do you think, for them that makes the Leafs feel like potentially a better matchup? Or maybe it's just the Lightning, the way they were rolling, you want no piece of that?
I think they looked at the Lightning, man. I don't think anyone really wanted a piece of the Lightning the way they've been going over the last month. And, you know, when Vasilevskiy finally finds his game there, he can just steal a series on his own. And then you factor in the season that Kucherov has had as well, and you can never count out Stamkos. So I think that's a team kind of rounding into form at the right time, just, you know, it much similar to the Florida Panthers last year. So I think everyone wants to stay away from them. But when I look at, you know, the Bruins and Leafs, I think Bruins definitely, you know, they can say it all they want that the past and even the recent past where they went 4-0-0 against them this season doesn't factor in. But it has to. I mean, it's got to be in your head. And, you know, as a professional hockey player, you have to block that out and realize that it's a completely new season. But I think that plays a role there. And I think, you know, when the Bruins are looking at matchups, I think you give the forward matchup to the Leafs, but then I think, you know, the Bruins, if you're looking at it technically, they win the matchup between the defensemen and obviously the goaltending. So I just think they know they probably have a better chance against them. But again, you got to realize that all that gets thrown out the door, and so many strange things can happen. If there's a team that should know that after what happened last year, it should be the core that's still there in the Boston Bruins dressing room.
Okay, this is going to sound quaint to Leaf fans, but yeah, it's back-to-back Game 7 losses in the first round for the Bruins, which, only two? But yeah, it is, and especially considering the way the regular season went and the expectations for that Bruins team getting a Panthers team that we didn't know was going to go all the way to the Cup Final. It seemed like an easy matchup. I mean, where is the level of pressure on this Bruins team?
So, Anthony, I was asked this yesterday, and I'm on the radio here, I was doing it. It's an interesting question, right? Because you can kind of look at it two ways. Look at it and say, okay, well, they're playing their rival, who yesterday Brad Marchand said is their bigger rival than the Montreal Canadiens now, that rivalry is kind of second place to the Leafs Bruins. So if they were to lose to the Leafs after sweeping them in the regular season, after owning them in the playoffs for so long, it could be disaster here, you know, the roof's falling in after this series, and, you know, who knows whose jobs are on the line. But at the same time, you know, I think they're not going to say it, but when you look at what they did in the offseason last year, coming into the season, they lost so many guys, there's so much roster turnover. They brought in a lot of guys, veterans maybe, that were kind of castaways, or even younger players who really didn't work out, you know, like a Morgan Geekie who didn't get qualified on cheap 1-year and 2-year deals. And it was sort of like patchwork by Don Sweeney because they had so many salary cap constraints. And then next year, or this offseason now, not next year, it's here almost, they're going to have about $21.5 million in cap space to spend. So I think the Bruins were kind of looking at this as a transition year. And I don't think they expected what this team did at all, even to be competing for the Atlantic Division or even the Eastern Conference top seed or even the President's Trophy down to the last 2 weeks of the season. So, you know, I think they got to be pretty satisfied with the way this season went compared to maybe what the expectations were. So if they lose in the first round, I don't think it's an ultimate failure like it was last year. But at the same time, I think playing the Leafs and, you know, you factor in the rivalry and the history, that kind of turns that narrative around a bit. So it will be interesting to see if they lose what the reaction is. But, you know, I just know that Don Sweeney is going to have a lot of money to spend, and he can put together a really better team on paper for next season. So if I'm Jim Montgomery and I lose this series, I don't think I'm in as much trouble as I might have been, because I think there's kind of an understanding there. Hey, you got us this far. We had a great season. Let's give it a run here in the playoffs. But, you know, I'm not saying – I mean, no one's safe in this league, right? But I just don't think he should be worried about it too much. Furthermore, guys, I think Jim Montgomery did a better job coaching this team than he did last year's team, given the amount of talent he had on that team and given the fact that he had a guy like Patrice Bergeron who was basically a player coach like a Reg Dunlop in Slapshot.
Yeah, what they were able to get out of Bergeron, I mean, obviously the play he was able to maintain deep into his NHL career is incredible. But yeah, the player-coach aspect of it all. I think when we talk about, well, I mean, obviously you guys will pick it one way or another a little bit more deeply. But when I'm looking at Jim Montgomery of this series, it kind of comes down to one question for me. And that's, how does he handle his goaltending? Are they really just going to alternate goalies come hell or high water? Is it a win and you're in situation? What do you think is going to happen here? Because, man, they've had two good goalies, and I completely understand the idea of sticking with what's got them to this point. But we've also all been there where if you have two goalies, do you really even have one? What do you think they end up doing with the tandem in this series?
Well, they're not telling us. It was funny yesterday. Don Sweeney spoke to the media in his end of the regular season presser, and of course that was a question. It actually came up twice. It's funny. He was asked that in the first question of the press conference and the last, and he said, "Well, I just answered it. My answer hasn't changed in 5 minutes." But he basically, in the first question, when he did answer it, he said, "Yeah, we know what the plan is, but we're not telling you." So you know, it's kind of a guessing game when it comes to the media and the fans right now, but. I mean, my hunch, just based on the fact that if you go back, I want to say it was right around when the Leafs and Bruins last met. It was March 7th, the day before the trade deadline, and the Bruins won that game 4-1. And I heard you guys referencing that. It was, you know, they celebrated the 2011 Cup team and, and all that. It was a big night there in Boston. He had said, you know, we're thinking about going with one goalie for a few games here down the stretch to see how that goes and kind of get a feel for it, to see if maybe that's something we want to try in the playoffs and veer away from the rotation. But he never did that. It just never happened. He just kept going with the rotation. And it was interesting, too, because after that deadline, you all know the rumors that were around Linus Ullmark. I mean, they had a trade in place that he vetoed, right? And so he stays. And he's been lights out since. I mean, he's looked like the Linus Ullmark last year that won the Vezina Trophy, not the one in the playoffs, but the one in the regular season.
I'd like to see that one.
And he was really amazing down the stretch here. So I figured, well, why aren't they riding him? And they just didn't. So, you know, I kind of did some digging, talked to someone with the team, and I wrote about this about a week and a half ago, because I'd spoken to a scout, and I asked a scout about it, and he said, you know, I know it's untraditional, and he goes, I'm with you, Murph, but you should just ride one guy, but you do kind of have a weapon there that you can kind of play mind games with the other team, especially right now in terms of advanced scouting into the playoffs, and then even game by game. You know, you can play mind games because they got to prepare for both guys. So I think based on what I'm hearing from people and team, I think they're going to try and stick with that. I mean, you know, let's say they put Swayman in there for game one because he had the better record against Toronto. He was really good against them. Let's say they put him in there for game one and he comes out, he makes 40 saves and a 3-0 shutout. You know, okay, you're not going to take him out, right? Well, no, I think they might go to Ullmark in game two. Ullmark comes in, he has a good game. I think they keep rotating until maybe one of these guys just gets completely lit up. I think it's going to take a really bad game, maybe even getting pulled, for them to go away from the rotation. So that's my hunch. I might be completely wrong, but I think they're going to stick with it.
How much does the 7 games against the Panthers inform that decision-making, as they had to wait until game 7 for Swayman to get his first start of that series?
Yeah, I think a lot of that has to do with it there. And, you know, there's another thing, too, that they've never admitted it. But, I mean, if you guys watch that series closely, I think it was game four when Tkachuk and Ullmark got into it in front of the net late in the third period. Tkachuk, you know, the Bruins had the game in hand, and Tkachuk was trying to do some message sending, and Ullmark threw a punch at him, and he was just off. Ullmark was completely off after that. And then, you know, he came out in game five, and a lot of times I'm watching him closely, and he was getting up slow. He looked like he was injured. So there are a lot of things that factored into why they probably should have gone with Swayman in game five there. And I think that is sticking in the back of their head. So that's why I think, hey, why not go with this until it really doesn't work? Let's go with what got us here. And I think that's the approach they're going to take.
Yeah, man, that is fascinating. Obviously, there'll be no shortage of things to talk about from this series, but one way or another, how they handle their goaltending will certainly be a big, big part of it. We talk a lot here about the idea of the Leafs going nuclear with their forwards, kind of loading things up. I've been reading some stuff about Boston's potential plan for the postseason. Is there a world where they go nuclear on the back end and try to occasionally get a Lindholm-McAvoy pair out there, or is the rest of the blue line, like, do they just need those guys spread out across a couple of pairs? Because, you know, I was looking at some of the Matthews with, or the numbers with Matthews versus McAvoy on the ice, and it's been pretty good in Matthews' favor. Now, obviously, I think McAvoy can play better than that. Is there a world where they kind of load up that top pair and the Leafs could see, I doubt for a full game, but over parts of it, a Lindholm and McAvoy pair?
Oh, yeah. They've definitely pressed that nuclear button already. They've been doing that down the stretch here, and I think that's fully why they've been doing it. Is to see how well that pairing could work, and if they could do that. And I think you make a good point there. Jim Montgomery, he might start a forward line and a defensive pairing. That doesn't mean they're going to be that, you know, together the whole game. I mean, he's the ultimate guy of just going shift by shift and adapting to the game. He's done a great job of in-game adapting. So, but I think that he does start with that. However, the interesting thing is, guys, and, you know, I wrote about this yesterday, if you look at it, the guy on defense that has the most success against Austin Matthews this season is Brandon Carlo. Mm. And nobody's really talking about him. And he's kind of been the quiet assassin for the Boston Bruins when it comes to being a shutdown guy this season. And it's been great because he's healthy. I mean, any time Carlo's been healthy over the past 5 years, he's been a factor. The problem is he can't stay healthy. I mean, it's been like a tradition where he either gets banged up heading into the playoffs or early in a playoff series in the first round. You go back to, I think, back to even that Islanders series they lost coming out of the COVID. And then again against Carolina, he was hurt. And he was kind of banged up last year as well. So it's like if he can stay healthy, he is a great shutdown guy and kind of the guy that, because he's been hurt for so many times, people forget about. So keep an eye on him. And maybe, yeah, I think they started off with Lindholm and McAvoy against Matthews, but I think they mixed Carlo in a lot there. And it also it's a great asset to have because it can relieve McAvoy and Lindholm of the minutes that they're usually eating out there. I mean, these guys sometimes have gone over 30 minutes a game. So to have a healthy Carlo, I think, is a real weapon for Jim Montgomery.
Not too many humans on planet Earth that Brandon Carlo is looking up to, but the Leafs just signed one in Cade Weber, Boston University's own. Like, do you know much about him other than he's 6'7"?
Yeah, no. And for a big guy, he's very mobile. He can move the puck. I like him a lot. He's, you know, he's just coming in, so I don't want to put huge expectations on the kid. But I think he's got a promising NHL career ahead of him. I was really impressed with how he played at BU. I think Toronto in general, Pierre McGuire and I were talking about this yesterday on our podcast, the iCast, and we said, Toronto, guys, you guys should be really thrilled about the fact that they have really started to corner the NCAA free agent market over the last 5 to 7 years. They've done a good job kind of scouting their college guys. I don't know the guys' names by heart that are, you know, your amateur scouts that are in charge of that, but they deserve a lot of credit for the way they're scouting out some of these college kids. And obviously we know that this is becoming more of a trend in the NHL. We see more and more of these kids coming out of college hockey as opposed to just mainly juniors. So kudos to the Leafs for bringing in him and some other guys that they have.
Yeah, I can't wait to see him. He looks like he could be a monster. Well, yeah, 6'7". That's a large human being. Jimmy, can't wait for game one tomorrow. Thanks for doing this.
All right, guys, and you're gonna not believe this, but I'm saying Leafs in six.
All right. Okay.
All right.
You go.
From your mouth to God's ears. All right. You too, man. See ya. Jimmy Murphy, editor-in-chief for Boston Hockey Now, host of the iTest podcast. That's okay. I'm glad he finished with that because I hadn't thought about that.
The prediction?
No.
Oh.
The other thing he said about the pressure thing.
Right.
Because it absolutely makes sense.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Bruins aren't supposed to be here. They're not. They just lost Patrice Bergeron. This is a team that had the best regular season record in the NHL last year and disappointed in the first round of the postseason. But yeah, they do have, what, like Pavel Zaka as their number one centerman.
Yeah.
And here they it took until game 82 for them not to win the Atlantic Division. Oh, God, like maybe the pressure is off. No.
Stop. No, stop. 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 They have two, you know, given the time, and they're not like capital V Vezina goalies, but it's like two Vezina goaltenders basically back there. They have a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman in Charlie McAvoy, and they have a 60-point Leafs tormentor in David Pastrnak, and despite losing the heart and soul of their team in Patrice Bergeron, the heart and soul of their team is still there in Brad Marchand. So don't you dare. I know it's just Jimmy Murphy who put this in your ear, but don't you dare give it any credence that there's no pressure. Okay, it's a bit of a reset year. Still tons of reasons why that team should be in win-now mode, and they choked it away like dogs last year. There better be pressure on them.
Linus Ullmark choked it away like a dog and then was traded, like he said, which is, like, needs to be, once again, reminded to people.
Yeah.
That it wasn't just like, hey, there were rumors.
Maybe, no.
He said, thanks.
I'm good. Don't want to be a king.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, we think.
Part of that is, like, obviously getting return on a player that's headed towards free agency. But part of that, it must be said, kind of feels like
gumming up the works in goaltending,
this seems... This is the plan to alternate goalies. We figured it out. You know, the rest of the NHL that doesn't do this and all the teams that have won Stanley Cups with, maybe not the guy that started the postseason and using more than one goalie over the course of a regular...
But by the end, there's a guy.
Yeah, there's a guy. It's like, no, we're smarter than you. We got it figured out. We're going to do the thing that works so well for us during the regular season, except we know factually they made an attempt to not have to do that.
Right.
We know that.
That's true.
We also know... that at last check, Linus Ullmark was reason number one. Mm-hmm. They choked that series away to the Florida Panthers, up 3-1 in the series, and not getting the opportunity to redeem himself with the start in Game 7. It was Jeremy Swayman also in Game 7 with a chance to steal the series and rectify all the wrongs that took place there.
Loser. Well, he did lose.
I mean, factually.
He's a loser. I'm just saying, in that one moment, there was a winner.
Loser.
And there was a loser.
No, it's just funny to talk about the narrative of, hey, man, what a great situation you have. And, why wouldn't you alternate two guys that have very similar numbers across the entire regular season? Well, you know who truly doesn't believe that that's the best way to go about things?
Don Sweeney.
Yeah, no kidding.
The other thing that he said in there, and, like, this is funny, right? Like, you learn things about teams as you, like, prep for a playoff series, and then you inevitably watch it. If Jim Montgomery is the tinkerer in chief, what does that do to Sheldon Keefe? Like, he's been so good. He's had his hands tied behind his back. I don't actually mean that, but I do think he is, like, going up to his assistants, and it's like when you go out with your buddies and y'all have that, like, we all have that little bit of a loose cannon who's like, hey, like, feel free to get me in line. It's like, I do feel like that probably happens with Sheldon Keefe. Like, hey, remind me that not tinkering has been good for me in this stretch.
You need a get back guy.
Yeah, you do. You need the get back coach, like with Sean McVay. How much does, if Jim Montgomery's like, oh, yeah, watch this, a little spice on the first line, a little bam, let me throw that in there. Like, what does that do to Sheldon Keefe? Yeah. Is he going to be able to kind of maintain the consistent lines? And I think we always get so bogged down in the same lines. And, of course, you should read the game, of course. But you also have to let things marinate and build to a certain extent as well. So that's something I'm really fascinated
with.
Like
we talked about yesterday, Sheldon Keefe has the experience advantage, and they're tied on series victories in the postseason.
So. Not Jack Adams, though.
Yeah, well, I mean,
that's just the
how do you win
a
Jack
coaching?
Adams if you're a Leaf coach in this generation? You just can't. You're not allowed. Not permitted.
No, and like,
I mean, if Mike Babcock couldn't do it, leading that team into the postseason, and then, I mean, I know it's a regular season award, but. Yeah.
No, it's like Austin Matthews year 14 when he has like a good season, but the core is depleted around him. And then it's like, all right, Toronto, here you go.
All right.
That's when it happens.
Okay. All right, time now for the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, 19+. Bet responsibly. It is finally here, Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern time on Sportsnet and CBC. Game one of Hockey Night in Canada, Leafs-Bruins from Boston. And the Bruins are favored to win the series ever so slightly and naturally favored in game one. Minus 130, the Leafs plus 110. The total, because it's the postseason, yeah. lose a goal at least.
Yeah.
Maybe a half goal. 5.5.
Can't believe I'm going to do it. I'm going to take the Leafs on the money line. I know. I'm a mush. It'll all be my fault when they lose tomorrow night, inevitably. I think the Leafs get off to a good start. I do. I think it's the biggest recipe for them to have success. I think they know that as well. And I think that this team is more, not motivated, but more ready than ever to start a postseason series on the right foot. They know what happened last year as well.
Yeah.
Can't believe I'm doing it. And I am buoyed by the fact that there's value. Not much, but plus 110.
Yeah.
I go Leafs on the money line.
I don't hate it. I got to be honest with you, because as much as the Leafs ended their regular season rather poorly, so did the Bruins. It should be noted, scored one goal over their final two regular season games. I don't mind that bet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you were going to do the money line, I would be sprinkling on the Leafs. I like, despite it being a deflated goal total, I still like the under. I mean, this is a Bruins team that has the goaltending advantage, is going to try and keep it a low-scoring game. I think we get a couple of teams just testing the waters. Mm-hmm. I think we get a 2-1, 3-2 type of hockey game tonight, and then we go from there. That was the Wake and Rake, presented by Sports Interaction, your homegrown sportsbook, 19+. Bet responsibly. When we come back, Josh Cloak is in Massachusetts getting set for this series.
Wonder if he has pants or not. First question.
You don't think that's written down as my first question? The Athletic Leafs reporter joins us next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Annis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.